Blog Talk Radio.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen do it. Scream from the haters, got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need the same music. No one man should have all that power. The clock ticking, I just count the hours. Stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power. Broken, the school's closed, the prison's open. We ain't got nothing to lose, motherfucker, we rolling. Motherfucker, we rolling. With some light-skin girls and some Kelly Rowland. And this white man world, we the ones chosen. So good night, cool world, I see you in the morning. I see you in the morning. This is way too much, I need a moment. No one man should have all that power. The clock's ticking, I just count the hours. I'm tripping off the power. Heal and fuck that, the world's ours. Fuck it, Chanel and the whole cast. Telling me she said they could kiss my whole ass. More specifically, they could kiss my asshole. I'm an asshole. Napoleon, my frozen mind, Goldie, and my ice brought the goalies and I embody every characteristic of the egotistic. He knows he's so fucking gifted. I just needed time alone with my own thought. Got treasures in my mind, but couldn't open up my own vault. My sound like creativity, purity, and honesty is honestly.
And today is the late great Tupac Shakur's birthday. So obviously, because my sound guys have changed my intro, I'm probably going to use another one of my production company's beats. So, of course, today is Tell the Truth Tuesday. My homegirl Kelly is actually supposed to be calling in. She had a couple of 2-3 issues. She was talking about anxiety and just, you know, just stressors and things like that. And I told her that she should call in because obviously this is why Tell the Truth Tuesday started. I need to go back and actually look at the exact date that it started because we know that my show, the Stay in Your Lane, the Monday night segment, started on August 2nd. So we're coming up on 1 year in August. And today is Tuesday, June 16th. It's your girl, D. Scott. I'm sitting here sipping on this Lipton lemon iced tea in one of my goblets with some ice because, you know, one of my favorite words, I was overserved yesterday because kicked off the birthday situation yesterday at the homie's house. You know, I hadn't seen my homie in like well over a year. So he had the, from the islands, he had the that Henny White. And so I don't know if you guys have ever had it, but, you know, I don't really drink Henny. I will if I'm around my people or I'm feeling especially, you know, roguish. But he had it, and I'm like, oh, you know, he's like, oh, it's for you. Go ahead, take it. So I'm sitting there drinking it, and it reminds me of scotch. And unfortunately, I was already drinking wine earlier. I was being a lightweight. I was drinking a little wine earlier, white wine at that. And if y'all know me, I know I don't really mess with white wine. So I really had a man-down situation, and it was funny because when I woke up this morning, I was like, damn, I was almost drunk. Like, I almost had a hangover. But shout-out to my homeboy, Mike. Thank you very much. You know, appreciative of you as always. We sat around. We kicked it, watched movie, you know, talked. We had so much to catch up about, and we were, you know, talking about, you know, Tupac and, you know, how it's his birthday and, you know, talking about the love situation in the movie Top 5. And so, it, you know, we were talking about the Tupac situation in reference to the fact that people keep forgetting that Tupac was also a poet. You know, he's a writer. So he wrote a couple poems. One of them was to Jada, and one of them was about Jada. And Paloma Ford, actually, she's a singer, blonde singer at that, black girl out of Cali. She did the track with Meek Mill, I believe it's called Suicidal. And she's on that track, but she actually wrote a song called Jada in response, I believe, to the Tupac situation. But it lends a little bit to make you wonder. You know, we see Will and Jada Pinkett, and we covet that relationship. We love this relationship. It's a great partnership. But what a lot of people don't know is that Will was recently divorced from Cherie Zampino, who we see on Hollywood Access, and Jada was at one point, a lot of people keep forgetting, had dated Grant Hill, So we, see her transition from the Grant Hill situation after the Tupac situation. And then, of course, Tupac was with Khadida, which is Quincy Jones's daughter. That whole situation happened. But you never see him quite love anybody the way that he did Jada. So even if you look at the photographs, even if you look at just even the way he spoke about her and the way that she just, trusted him in a certain specific way, it's kind of endearing because you really don't, not that you don't see that with her and Will. You definitely see that with her and Will. She's definitely made some sacrifices in order to be his partner, and I do love that about their relationship because she doesn't talk about it like, she doesn't talk about Will the way that she talked about Pac, if that makes sense. And so when you have somebody like myself who writes literature and I immortalize, so to speak, some of these motherfuckers, you have to, it's always good to look back and say, you know what, that's so weird because this person is somebody that I was really in love with, so I thought, and then you experience something else and you're like, I don't know that I love that person now, looking back at how cold I was, how rigid I was, or how I was when they touched me, and then you don't mind someone else touching you or loving on you or, just doing all these things. So I also had a conversation with my homegirl earlier today, and I was telling her, I said one of my great loves that actually didn't make the book was this Panamanian gentleman. I mean, I touched on him briefly, but I was with him on and off for 6-7 years, and that relationship was ruined by some information that was given to me by a friend, and it was true information, but it was the wrong timing, and it devastated me. But I remember being so enamored by this person that I would be physically exhausted. Like, literally, I would go see him for a week, 2 weeks, a month, and would come home back to Pittsburgh at the time and be completely exhausted. I couldn't work. I couldn't eat. I was just completely lovesick. We never fought. We never had any issues. Sex was always amazing. He always took care of me. I always took care of him. It was just like a little married couple, and then everything got shattered. And then later on after I got married, which is why I always honor the universe and whatever the universe is trying to teach me or give to me, because if you don't, what happens is you end up getting married, you have a baby, which to the other gentleman, you refused to have children with. You said no, you don't want to get married, all this craziness. And then you see this gentleman years later, you're married, you have a baby. It was like a bad Lifetime movie special. And the feeling was almost still the same. It was horrible because here I am married, my husband at the time and my ex were working, in the same organization. So, I briefly saw him, and we looked at each other. First thing he did was smile. There was no hate. There was no animosity, but it was horrible because it was still there. And, now I have to have this conversation with my ex-husband. He's like, what are you doing looking over there and whatever, whatever. And I'm sure he had moved on. I'm sure his, wife, new wife or whatever, girlfriend at the time was there. But it's just one of the reasons why I literally take shit to the edge of death. Like I will physically hurt myself up front and personal before I would not honor a situation in the universe, because if I don't ride it all the way out, it's going to be doomed to repeat itself. So that's why I don't ever, and I talk about this in the book, I say that, if I, at the time, now a lot of people don't know this, I can obviously say this, in the book, since I've written the book, I've seen the Victor character many, many times since the book was published 2 years ago, and we, completely cut everything off. Well, I cut it off. And in the book, it just sounds like, I was talking to somebody today, and they were like, it just sounds like he was such a douchebag, and he was horrible. And I said, what a lot of people don't know is that it was really me. It was really me saying, I don't want to move down there. I don't want to be there. It was too much stress. He had a lot of women, and, and I was very, understanding, oh, you got to clean that shit up before I come down there. And, it just, like I said yesterday on the show, I'm assuming that if I like you, and I think I'm pretty dope, that other bitches like you, or that other females like you, that other women like you. And so I never come from a place of being too comfortable where I can just think that, oh, no, he would never do that to me, or, oh, no, you know, I'm just going to come in and just, it doesn't work like that. Everybody has to work to get to certain levels that, and it has to be something deeper than just sex and deeper than just you look nice today, you know, that's keeping you here. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that in that book, you know, I'm talking about a relationship where I thought I was, like, so in love. And then when you get into a new situation, you're like, I don't even know if I love that motherfucker at all. Like, I don't know. You know, what was it? So I talk about in the book, I said, because in the book the relationship was unfinished. And I said, you know, if I ever saw him in the airport, that I would grab all the pieces of candy and all the little toys at the cash register, and I would physically assault him if I ever would run into him in an airport. And that's, like, my biggest fear is that I didn't finish something, whether it's a book, whether it's a sentence, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a thought. You know, my biggest fear is that I don't finish something and then I'm doomed to repeat it, or the Jesus is going to put it right back in my face so that I have to suffer again. So I'd rather just take all my lumps all at once and be done with it, and then know that if I, and you know, this is funny because we're talking about my a friend of mine, he was saying that he had seen his ex out and about, and he said he saw her. And people don't understand, you're not really, you didn't really see each other. You felt each other's energy. These people haven't seen each other in years. And he was saying that when he saw her, it felt like all the energy was sucked out of him. And I said, of course it was, because you guys were very connected. You guys were very sexual. You guys were very enamored with each other. So, of course, it would make sense that because it ended so tragically that you would see each other and the life would literally be sucked out of you because it's unfinished business. They had a very nasty, unfinished breakup, like separation, motherfuckers moved to other countries, like it was bad. So when things like that happen, you walk around with these layers to yourself that you never really get a chance to get rid of. So I guess that's where a lot of women come from when they say, you know, I need closure. I don't never need fucking closure. I don't need closure, closed casket, that's it, you're dead to me, it's done, if you cross me. You know, but in situations, other things happen where people fall off and people, you know, they say things they don't mean, and then, you know, we have to figure out how to get back. So what ends up happening is he says, you know, well, I seen her, she sucked all the energy out of me, and I'm like, but it's not over. And even though I know he would never talk to her because there's been years that have passed, there's some questions going around about, you know, people being faithful and things like that. I know he's not going to tolerate that. It's just, that's why you can't go jumping into new relationships with new people and you didn't finish the other one that you had. So with my situation, I can be very comfortable in saying that if I saw the Victor person or whatever in an airport, I could be like, hey, what's good, you know, and keep it moving. I'm very comfortable in saying that if I saw the guy from Detroit, that I could be like, hey, what's good? I mean, I'm still a little salty balls about it, but I would definitely just be like, hey, what's good, and just keep it moving. But for me, I'm not linked to anybody energy-wise that they could suck energy out of me, or that I would feel like I needed to, you know what I mean, have closure with, that could end up ruining everything. So I'm not the girl that, like, calls someone and says, hey, oh, my God, you're never going to guess who I ran into and where I'm at right now. I'm in Paris, France with so-and-so because I ran into him on Tuesday, and we just rekindled it. Like, that doesn't happen to me because I literally – you will not get away with just being able to slink out of the relationship. There has to be some sort of, you know what I mean? Like, it's always tragic. With me, it's never like, oh, you know, it was just the distance. Mm-mm. With Victor, it was, he told a lie. And, you know, for as truthful and honest as we were throughout the entire relationship about the hoes, the bitches, everything I was doing, everything he did, what I did to him, because I did do something pretty horrific to him as well. Not cheating or anything, just because I'm not that way. But, you know, so I just feel like, you know, when I start dating people, that I either give them my book or I tell them they should read it, because it really is the blueprint to who I am. But there were certain people that were left out of the book on purpose. And like I had to tell them, it's because you were not important. You know, it wasn't important for me to talk about, you know, this guy that I felt was the love of my life. And really, it ended in such a tragic and horrible way that it would have overshadowed the Victor situation, and people would have been more interested in hearing about the whirlwind courtship with that lasted all these years, and I'm young and I don't know anything. Now, do I look back And I think, like, for sure, hands down, loved my husband. That was, you know, that was like it. It couldn't have been. We just couldn't make it work. It just didn't work. He had different ideas about things. I'm a certified natural born hustler. Everything I do is about money and making sure that I'm safe and financially secure, and I've been that way for a long time. And he's just very much, if he can't, you know, be in his profession, he don't want to work, and, you know, and he makes good money what he does. But like I said, that part of it, you know, if it was just based on looks and just based on energy and just based on trust, it would be my husband hands down. And I also don't believe that you get one soulmate. I believe that you get many soulmates, and I believe that the entire purpose of a soulmate is so that when you die, you come back to life. That's what it's all about to me. And you're trying to find this person that, you know, you were with in a different lifetime, or you were with some, you know, at some other time. And I genuinely feel that the Victor character in the book, who I later on had to denounce and say he was my cousin, and I did, and that's another reason we don't speak, because I am evil that way. And I know he listens to the show, I don't give a fuck, and that's why the show is called Zero Fucks. But you kind of hurt my feelings. So, you know, just, you know, you don't tell people that you love them, and then you do all this fucked up shit, and then, you know, you don't hear from people. And silence for me is, like, the biggest punishment. And that's why, you know, when men do that to me, that makes me feel like if you want to be quiet, we can be quiet. Nobody can be, you know, more silent and ignore you quicker than I can. I mean, I'm really good at it. But there was a lot that needed to be said. And certain things will not be fixed with silence. So the more quiet you are, the more you don't speak up, the more you don't say things to me that perhaps need to be said or whatever, and I don't always need apologies, I don't need that, then the more that I just think you don't give a fuck. And so it just gets to a place where then I don't give a shit anymore, and then I just keep moving, like in the case of Victor. You know, we would never be friends just because we have too much, you know, history. We might be able to do business together at some point one day because he's a brilliant business person, or I might, you know, use him as a consult. But I'm really in a place right now, based on, you know, the Tupac reading of his poems and then all that stuff. I'm just in a different place right now where I feel like, you know, I was speaking today, and I normally don't talk about, you know, my one ex, but I just feel like, you know, if I could have that feeling again, like where I'm, you know, I'm always like, you know, just physically just so enamored by somebody, then I would trade that for any pain that I went through with Victor. And also with Victor, another thing that happened to me was that I suffered because I didn't honor a connection. And in the process of trying to hurt him and break his heart and hurt his spirit, I ended up in an abusive relationship because I was only in that relationship to piss him off. Literally. And I talk about that in the book in his chapter two, the one that I had to strangle with the telephone cord. You know what I mean? Literally got myself into that situation because I'm an evil, hateful motherfucker. And I wanted him to suffer. And there's nothing more than a man hates than to see his woman or a woman he likes or is attracted to happy. He does not want to see you happy and smiling and shit with other dudes. It doesn't matter if you aren't together. It doesn't matter. Guys don't want to see that shit. And Victor was a crazy jealous psycho. So he would, you know, go love your boyfriend and, you know, shit like that. But at least I knew he cared. Because if he didn't care, and he still cares. You know what I mean? I just, you know, I spoke to him not that long ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. And I said something really fucked up to him. And he's like, well, good for you. And I'm like, I'm just kidding. You know what I mean? But, again, another situation, not married, never had kids. You know, so we all, as women, can't put it on me. I didn't do anything. You're still, not that he's unhappy. I'm sure he's happy doing what he's doing, being free. But he's 40-plus now. The probability he's going to get married and have children now is, like, maybe 10%. And if you knew how picky he was, you would know that that's not going to happen. He's just going to be happy single for the rest of his life. But he's never been married. He never had children. Whereas with me, I'm perfectly okay never having children again, but I'm also perfectly okay if I was in love, maybe popping another one out. I'm also okay if I never get married again, but I'm also very much okay if we went to the Justice of the Peace and was like, fuck it, let's just go do it and have a party in a year to celebrate our one-year anniversary because nobody knew we were married. That's the type of ignorant shit that I do. Mm-hmm. But I definitely, one of the stressors that I think people don't realize that there are certain things that your body will trigger. So, you know, there's certain events that I'll forget the dates, but my body remembers. I'll get sick or I'll, you know, something will happen to me or I'll, you know, I was talking to Kelly earlier in the week, and she was talking about having panic attacks. And I used to have panic attacks so bad because it's almost like the body is reacting to some sort of stimulus that you know is getting ready to happen. It might not have happened yet, but whatever it is, so whether that was you're in an intersection where maybe you got in a car accident before, or you're in a situation where you know it did not end well before, and you just get panic attacks. But mine were so bad that I would, like, pass out. Like, I would literally have to take pills to calm the fuck down so that my heart didn't explode out of my chest. And of course, the first time it happens, you think it's a heart attack. You're like, oh my God, I'm 28 years old and I'm having a heart attack in the middle of my divorce. Like, it was bad. But because my body doesn't respond very well to medication, because I don't take anything, I won't even take aspirin. I'm all about the home remedies and drink water and, you know, go outside and stand on one left leg. But, you know, part of the reason I told Kelly to call the show was because I wanted her to understand that, like, you know, that's all a part of anxiety and depression. They kind of go hand in hand, and you never know, you know, which is coming first and when it's going to hit you. And she was speaking about how she was debilitated and to the point where on certain days she was unable to get out of the house. You know, so I just, you know, wanted to let her know that we've all gone through it. Whatever stressor that she's having, you know, I want her to know that we've all been through it, and just to try to eliminate the stress. And ever since I started doing Tell the Truth Tuesdays, you know, it's been a great weight off me. So even if sometimes it doesn't make sense what you're saying, I'm sending very specific messages to very specific people about very specific things that, you know, whether they know what I'm talking about or not, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you know I'm talking about you, or you don't know that I'm talking about you, or whatever it is, it gets it off my chest. I haven't had a panic attack in several years, you know, knock on wood, and I'm hoping that I don't need to have another. But I definitely want to leave this show with a little bit of Tupac, but also I want to read to you what love looks like to me. And he wrote this poem that says, "What can I offer her?" And he says, "All my life I dreamed of meeting one with immense beauty, and once I found her, I would charm her, and she would be mine forever. And I have found her, and indeed she is all I wished for and more, but she is not charmed nor intrigued. Then I think to myself, what can I offer her? The tears warm my eyes and blur my vision, and I stick to my stance of bravado and give her the same uninterested look she gave me. She was so beautiful, but what can I offer her?" So for me, that's like kind of sad, because it's like, you know, we often get into these places where we wish for things, and then when we get them, we're like, fuck, you know, I wanted a Mercedes, but I forgot that getting an oil change on a Mercedes is $300 a pop. You know, I wanted a Range Rover, but I forgot when the shocks go bad, you know, they cost $20,000, you know, per each one. You know, so I just think that everybody, you know, again, everybody thinks they're a hunter until a hunter walks in the room. And then he wrote this one specifically called Jada. "You are the omega of my heart, the foundation for my conception of love. And when I think of what a black woman should be, it's you that I first think of. You will never fully understand how deeply my heart feels for you, and I worry that we'll grow apart and I'll end up losing you. You bring me to climax without sex, and you do it with all, you do it all with regal grace. You are my heart in human form, a friend I could never replace." And that one he specifically wrote Jada. And so I kind of just feel like if I'm not going to have that, then I'll just have nothing. So everything with me has to be passionate, guns blazing, fire. You know, I don't really do the silent, we're going to see who likes who first. I'm very upfront about what I like, what I don't like, what I want, and what I don't want. So if there's ever any question, you know, it's the question is never mine. It's usually me driving myself crazy, like, well, does he like me? Does he not like me? Does he want to be bothered? Does he not want to be bothered? Does he understand what's going on? Does he know how this is going to end? So these are the questions that I ask myself. And then, you know, in the situation that I put myself into, you know, it's just, for me, I wouldn't, you know, there's nothing I can do. Like, I can't change anything because we've already altered something that maybe should have happened 5 years ago, and it's happening now. So now I have to honor that connection, and I have to honor him as a man. So it's just kind of difficult, you know, and that's a stressor for me when you have to, you know, rein your feelings back in because you're like, I don't want to be the crazy motherfucker that everybody thinks that I am over somebody that I, you know, am not, that's not my husband. That's not my, you know what I mean? I have no connection to him other than the one that I want to have. So I'm going to leave it at that. And I wish that Kelly would have called the show Miss Jones, but I'm going to leave the show with Keep Your Head Up, because I feel like, you know, we all go through shit all the time. We all see shit we don't want to see. We all go through shit that we don't want to go through. But obviously, in honor of Tupac's birthday, this is one of my favorites. This song used to have me, like, crying my eyes out. This one is Dear Mama. So happy birthday, Pac. Talk to you guys next Monday.
Something for my godson Elijah and little girl named Corinne. Say the black of the belly, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the flesh and the deep of the roots. I give a holler to my sisters on welfare. Tupac can, if don't nobody else can. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need me, and I ain't trying to catch up, I just told them how I feel. You know what makes me unhappy? When brothers make babies and leave a young mother to be unhappy. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and our game from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up. I remember Marvin Gaye used to sing to me. He had me feeling like black was the thing to be. And suddenly the kettle didn't seem so tough. And though we had it rough, we always had enough. I hopped up off about my curfew and broke the rules. Ran with the local crew and had a smoke or two. I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my pipe dream. I holler about the mic and make it to the light screen. To make a dollar out of 15 cents. It's hard to be legit and still pay your rent. And in the end it seems I'm heading for the pen. I try to find my friends, but they're blowing in the wind. Last night my buddy lost his whole